Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. And today we're going to take a look at native plant gardens with my old buddy and guest, Neil DeBoe, president of Prairie Nursery Incorporated in Westfield, Wisconsin. You may have some questions. We're going to zero in a little bit on planning. This is kind of the time of the year. You're not going to be planting a whole lot right at the moment, but you might be doing a little planning. So we'll talk about that. And, of course, we'll answer your native plant questions as we move along. You can join in already. Frankie from Fort Atkins is on board, but you can join in, Frankie, as well at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I'd certainly love to hear from you. And also, don't forget our Facebook page, the Larry Mueller Show. That's the place to go for a question or a photo. I wanted to bring that up. I almost forgot about the photos because oftentimes, Neil, by the way, thanks for coming. Appreciate
it. My pleasure, Larry. Great to be here again.
It's always nice to see some good photos, and you always have great photos. One of the things I love about your catalog is all the wonderful photos in that in your catalog of your various plants.
Well, thank you.
And it's something like that to look at in terms of planning and thinking ahead about your landscape. It's a good kind of thing to have.
It helps to give people ideas about what appropriate plants might work for their landscape situation. And then we have information on the actual planning process, but we also have a lot more extended information on our website at prairienursery.com.
Yeah, you answer a lot of really good questions there. As you think about planning, because this would be certainly a good time of the year to be doing that, what is that the first step? Take a look at the catalog, or should we be doing something else?
Well, of course, we always would like if people would take a look at our catalog. But, you know, when you're planning your garden, you want to, first of all, envision what you want to create.
Mm-hmm.
And what I ask my clients when I assist them in designing their gardens is the first thing I say is, what are your goals?
Mm-hmm.
And let's write down your goals. And usually those goals entail creating habitat, year-round interest and beauty in the landscape. When I say year-round, I mean all four seasons.
Yeah.
And reducing or eliminating the use of chemicals and pesticides as much as possible, if not completely. And also just reducing maintenance wherever possible.
Yeah.
And this is not no maintenance, but it can be lower maintenance when done properly. So these are usually the highest priorities that people have. And the wonderful thing is that our native plants offer this opportunity to achieve these goals, and we look at the native plant garden as more than just a garden. We look at it as plant communities.
Yeah.
And so those plant communities consist of prairies where we have an amalgamation of 15, 20, 30, 40 or more flowers and grasses. And then we have shrub thickets, which complements the prairie. The prairie has lots of flowers that attract insects, that provide food for birds. And the flowers, of course, also are great for pollinators.
Yep.
So you're able to support pollinators, butterflies, hummingbirds, all kinds of wonderful garden visitors. The shrubs then provide cover for birds to nest in, as well as berries for food. And if you have adjacent woodlands or want to create a woodland, then you can plant native trees, which also are very important in the caterpillar stage for many of our butterflies. The butterflies will utilize the prairie flowers for nectar, but many of them utilize the leaves of oaks and cherries and willows and all sorts of different trees.
They need those too.
Absolutely. So yeah. you really want to load it up, stack the deck with native trees, shrubs, prairie flowers, grasses, etc. And then you can have an amazingly diverse habitat. And if you do this, it's like 1 + 1 + 1 = 10.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how much interest you can create in the landscape. And even in small spaces, you don't need acres and acres. You can do this in your backyard.
I wondered about that. I wanted to bring that up because certainly there's most people these days are living in an urban environment or an urban place. How good a job can we do in integrating native plants into that?
It's amazing what you can do in a small space. And a friend of mine did his graduate degree at the University of Minnesota, and he lived in downtown Minneapolis. And he lived in an apartment, and there was a little green space between the apartments, and he planted native small trees, low-growing trees,
mm-hmm.
shrubs, and prairie flowers and grasses, and his bird and butterfly list was unbelievable. He lived on 4th Street, I mean, downtown, concrete desert of Minneapolis, and his bird and butterfly list was astounding because he had created this little oasis of native plant habitat. And he stacked the deck. He put in low-growing trees that fit the space, shrubs, and prairie flowers and grasses. And it was just amazing what he was able to attract to his property.
Did he, I wonder, was there an effect on neighboring properties over time or not?
It depends on what the neighboring property is. And this is another thing that homeowners can do. If they have adjacent land, and I really don't know, because the neighboring properties were factories and apartment buildings, so I don't really think there was a lot of carryover, but these creatures found his little habitat spot. Mm-hmm. But what a lot of people do, if let's say you're on the edge of a woods, well, you don't have to, if there are valuable native trees in that woods, you don't have to plant trees because you've got that complementary habitat already there. So you can focus on planting shrubs, prairie flowers, prairie gardens, etc. And even a small prairie garden of a few, 20, 30, 40, 50 square feet, you can pack a lot of interest in that and bring in all kinds of birds, butterflies, pollinators, etc. So it's pretty amazing what you can do with a small space.
Are there things you should avoid?
Yes. In an urban garden situation, especially in a small garden, you want to be selective about your plants. And so the first step in planning is once you've got the idea of what you want to create, then you start picking out the community types that you want, where you want your little prairie garden or big prairie garden, where you want to have a belt of shrubs or a group of shrubs, usually towards the background in a small landscape from the viewing location of the windows or house or wherever. And you want to select the plants to match your soil conditions, whether it's dry sand or heavy clay. If it's a damp spot, there's all sorts of wonderful native plants to solve problems with. There's plants that will grow in horrible dry sand, plants that will grow in wet clay. Where you couldn't grow a lawn to save your life, get rid of the lawn. Put in really cool native plants and be done with it and create a wonderful habitat. And then after you've selected the plants or the concept of communities, then you start really getting down to the plants. And the things you want to avoid are aggressive plants. And just because a plant is native doesn't mean it's not aggressive. There are aggressive native plants that we really try to avoid using, especially in small spaces. If we have a large prairie where the plants are all fighting it out, we can put some pretty heavy hitters out there. But in a small space, you want to go with a selected group of plants. And so we have a lot of information on selecting plants. I think you have some information posted on the website.
Yeah, your piece, you've got this piece on prairie plants for urban and suburban gardens.
Yes.
Which I think is really cool.
It's really handy because it helps people to select the plants that are going to be well-behaved, that are showy, that have high wildlife and landscape value, and generally don't cause problems for their neighbors. And every plant has its report card, and some will say does not play well with others. So those are the ones you want to avoid. And even on that list, we list the good guys, and then we list some in a small garden situation that you should avoid.
Our guest today, Neil DeBoll, president of Prairie Nursery Incorporated in Westfield, Wisconsin, having a great time talking with him about native plants and planning your native garden. Callers online at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. And let's take Frankie in Fort Atkinson. Been waiting a while. Thanks for waiting. Frankie, what's on your mind?
Okay. Good morning, and thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering if there is a difference between native plants that you would plant along a shoreline for shoreline restoration as opposed to plants you might plant away from the shoreline.
Okay, Frankie, when you say away from the shoreline, are you talking like ornamental grasses or are you talking like lawn grass?
Either one.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. If I'm doing if I live along a lake or a river or something like that and I want to plant instead of having a concrete patio or something like that,
okay,
I want to do a natural restoration.
Okay.
Is there a difference? Can I just plant any kind of native plant there, or are there plants that are more beneficial for shoreline rather than...
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. Generally speaking, there are specific guidelines provided by the DNR as far as what plants are appropriate for shoreline restorations. And in many cases, you are required as part of your responsibility as being a landowner on a lake or a stream to maintain a high-quality lakeshore. and shoreline buffers. Usually it's a 30-foot setback from the lake. Sometimes you can make adjustments to that based upon mitigating circumstances. But the requirements are that you use a combination of native flowers and grasses, and usually you will work with the county to develop the plan and the plant list and what is appropriate for your situation based upon your soils, the moisture, etc. And it's very interesting. It can be fairly technical. It's not overwhelming, but it's really quite simple. But you have to pay attention to the soil moisture, because near the lake, you're going to have damp soils. But as you typically, depending on the slope, as you go away from the lake, it can get dry pretty fast, especially a lot of lakes in central and northern Wisconsin are on sandy soils. So the soil will dry out pretty fast as soon as you get away from the capillary action of the lake water on the edge. If you have a very gradual slope and your soil is heavy, then you'll have a lot of capillary action where you'll have moist soil extending quite a ways away from the actual water line. So you want to select the plants accordingly. And there is a wide variety of native plants available in both flowers, grasses, and sedges. And sedges are grass-like plants, many of which do well in damp soils. We have in our catalog and on our website, we have shoreline buffer gardens specifically designed for this application. So you can go to our website at prairienursery.com, and you can look at our plant gardens. And we also have seed mixes for larger areas. We have a wet meadow rain garden mix, and then we have detention basin mixes, which are more for detention basin situations rather than lakeshores. But then we also help people in the process. So if you have questions, you can give us a call at our office at 800-476-9453.
800, what was that again? 800-476...
9453. Operators on duty, call now.
Thank you very much.
Oh,
yeah,
you're very
thanks,
welcome.
Maggie, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. The number 1-800-642-1234. Leslie in Hartford up next. Hi, Leslie. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Our beautification group in Hartford is building an alpine garden this year, and the DNR wants us to use all native plants, native to Wisconsin. Does Prairie Nursery have any alpines that are native to Wisconsin?
How would you define alpine plants, Neil?
Well, they are from the Alps, from my home country in Switzerland, you see. No, alpine plants are usually plants that grow in high elevation mountains in rocky scree. Scree being very fine particled stone. Extremely well draining and usually very dwarf because of the conditions of growing at a high elevation and in very low nutrient and low water holding capacity soils, or not even soils, basically rock.
Yeah.
So the plants don't have a lot of nutrition, so they tend to stay low. Also, plants that grow at high elevations can't be very tall because they get blown over by the wind and their stems break. So that's a general definition of an alpine plant. And of course, it applies to plants not just in the Alps, but in any montane high elevation situation. So in Wisconsin, since our highest point is Tim's Hill at 1,961 feet, we don't really have a lot of alpine plants. However, we do have plants that are occupy similar habitats. And usually, if you look at plants that grow in dry sand prairies or dry rocky prairies, we have some low-growing plants that are actually can be used in an alpine garden situation. And I can give you a few examples here.
Let's do it.
One plant is called harebell. It's a beautiful little plant, Campanula rotundifolia. It grows 1 to 2 feet tall. And it grows in rocks. You'll see it growing in stone up in Door County in the rocky ledges in Door County. It's quite common. And it'll grow right in the rocks. If you have a little bit of shade, there is a low-growing sedge called Carex aburnia. I'm so bad at the common names. Carex aburnia. Everybody knows that, right?
Sure.
Right. Ivory sedge. Okay, and it likes a little bit of shade, but it grows really short. I collected some seed growing on about 3 inches of soil on top of a hunk of dolomite boulder in Door County, just growing in this rock. And so that's another great choice. A prairie smoke. This is a dry prairie plant that only gets 6 to 12 inches high.
That's a pretty plant.
It is gorgeous. It's an absolutely gorgeous plant. There's also a plant called scaly blazing star, Liatris squarosa, which only gets maybe a foot tall. So it is a great, great option. Notting pink onion and also the prairie onion. These are some other great choices. So that's just a quick...
That's a few, and there's more. And Leslie, and you were pulling those out of your, just as a reminder to yourself, out of your own catalog.
Yeah, I'm actually going through the catalog in my head. It's like, oh yeah, I know this one. I'm just checking to make sure I've got them all covered. But there are some other ones as well. So wild petunia is another great plant. Again, right. These all stay generally less than a foot tall, so they would qualify as a kind of rock garden or alpine garden plant. And then there's some a few low-growing grasses like June grass and a couple others that you can find on our website or in our catalog, too. Purple love grass is another beautiful
low-growing grass.
So lots to choose from if you're looking at creating a rock garden or alpine garden using our native Wisconsin plants.
There you go, Leslie. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. You can join in, too. Again, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller with Neil DeBull, president of Prairie Nursery. Brianne Chasso, our on-air producer for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Next week, by the way, we're going to be previewing the 2016 Wisconsin Public Television Garden Expo, which runs February 12th through the 14th. I will be at the expo on Saturday, the 13th in the morning. I'm giving a talk with Dr. Death and and Lisa Johnson, and we're going to have a lot of fun that morning. But that's coming up. Lisa Johnson is going to be helping us talk about Garden Expo. Do you go to Garden Expo?
We go there every year.
I thought you were there.
Oh, we missed it once because we had a show in Chicago and regretted not going to the Garden Expo. So
no.
Since then, we're regulars. We've been there for, I don't know, 20
Forever.
Years. Yeah. I think since the first one, Larry. I'm not absolutely sure, but I think it was the first one. So, and we're at I'll be there Friday, Saturday, Sunday at booth 234. So,
come same visit. Booth every year.
Every year, I'm there every single day because it's fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Maybe sometimes I can get away from my booth and go see some of the other wonderful, wonderful booths and stuff that people have available.
This really time good. Of the year, you go in there and it smells wonderful, and it's warm, and typically it's nasty outside. It almost always snows or does something rotten. And
yes, as we're trying to drive down and get set up in the slush and the snow and the rain, you bet.
Well, Pete in Wisconsin Dells has something for us, so let's go there. Pete, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is I have a house where the border of the house is just surrounded by these thorn bushes. Now, I believe they could be raspberry bushes. I think they get some berries on them as well. I got about 3 acres of the woods, and they're just everywhere in the back of the woods. So my question is what can I do about either controlling them somewhat or getting rid of them all together and then putting something in their place, because where they grow, nothing else grows. There might be weeds scattered through there, but they're the main thing that grows there. And if I could, I'd take the answers off here unless you have any questions for me.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Okay. Do they grow about 3 to 6 feet tall, Pete?
No. I would say 3 feet. Not quite 6, maybe about 3 feet tall.
Okay, and they creep and crawl to form big patches, correct?
Yeah.
And they're really thorny, and you walk through them, and you rue the moment that you decided to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, they're probably blackberries or raspberries.
Yep.
And these can be really difficult. They're native plants, and they do have wildlife value because a lot of wildlife will utilize the berries, but they are not particularly user-friendly, and they're hard to eradicate because they creep by rhizomes. And you're somewhat limited in the approach. It's actually one of the problems I have in my prairie. They actually invade my prairie, and I generally don't like to use herbicides, so I go out and dig them out with a dandelion digger, but you got to get the whole rhizome.
That's the problem.
It's real work. And so sometimes I will go out and cut them at the base and apply concentrated glyphosate herbicide or brush-killing herbicide just on the cut stump. So I'm using just minimal drops in the fall. It's very important that you do this in the fall or the winter. But on 3 acres, that's not realistic. So what you can do is you can implement a program of regular mowing. By mowing, if you can get in there between the trees and hopefully it's not slopy or rocky, you can go in and mow them back. But this is going to take 2 or 3 years, and you're going to have to mow them 2, 3, 4 times a year. That will generally eliminate them by exhausting their root reserves when they try and regrow after every mowing. So then as far as replacing them, You want to make sure that you understand your soil type, your shade conditions, your overstory trees. It gets into a little more process here of selection and design, like we talked about earlier. Get to know all the factors and all the growing conditions on your site, and then you can match up the best plants to match your conditions that are also going to achieve the goal that you want.
And some soil testing in there, too. Probably.
Soil testing, and not just the nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, calcium, magnesium, and pH, which are very important. That's nitrogen, phosphorus, mm-hmm. potassium, calcium, magnesium, and pH, acidity or alkalinity. But you also want to know the soil texture, sand, yeah. sandy loam, loamy sand, silt loam, loam clay loam, silty clay loam. So, but we have information on the using the field test. You don't F-E-E-L. Feel test. You can tell by feeling the soil. It can be really pretty simple. So we have information on that on our information on our website. And if we have other questions, you can just give us a call.
And we have a link, by the way, too. If you happen to be on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, we've got a link to Neil's website. So you can just, if you're there, you can just click on it and go right there. Cheryl in Conover has a question. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
The question I have for you is, we lived in Texas for quite a while, and they have a thing called tumbled glass. And we really loved using it in our gardens because it's lightweight, easy, you don't get cut, it's colorful. And for us, it was just a great way to dress up a garden or to not have a garden and have potted plants on there, which were a little bit easier to care for. In Wisconsin, it's impossible to find this. The only way I found it was through a recycled guy in good old Rhinelander, Wisconsin, who used to do it at the recycle thing. He used to get the green glass and the blue and the white and the red and whatever color glass, crush it, and then tumble it, which makes it soft so that you don't get cut. And we can go over there with a pickup truck and pick up, but I've not seen it in any of the gardens. I'm very surprised.
Well, ma'am, I can tell y'all ain't from around here. See, we ain't got no tumble glass here in Wisconsin. We just got beer glasses. But no, seriously, I think what you're talking about is old glass that's been broken up and then put into a rock tumbler.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I've never seen it here either, I think.
Other than in Bernie's Rock Shop in Madison.
That's what I was going to say. I was just at Bernie's this morning on my way in. What a wonderful place. And Bernie's will, you'd have to check and see. I don't know if they actually saw. I bought one of their old tumblers that I took home, Tumble Rocks. I don't think they actually sell them, though.
No.
But you could.
I have no idea. I'm afraid.
I think you're going to have to take the pick-em-up truck down to Texas and load that thing up, ma'am. I don't know. I'm really sorry, but I've never seen it here either. So
no, and actually, tumbled glass can fetch a little dollar.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, it's if you just buy it here, you're going to be you may be paying quite a bit of money for just a small, a few handfuls.
I would think you need a big, great big giant tumbler that you would put the tumbling material in and break a bunch of bottles and throw them in there, but I've never seen it here.
And Cheryl, you know what, Cheryl? When you said I'm looking at tumbled glass, and I'm thinking, what plant is that?
Me too. I thought it was tumbled grass.
I was reaching for my phone to look it up, and I couldn't find it. Anyway, I'm afraid you're out of luck. And literally, if you're ever in Texas again with a truck, you might want to bring it back that way. And
you can make a fortune.
You could probably start your own business, as a matter of fact, because I think there would be a lot of people who would love to see something like that. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Ryan in Onalaska up next. Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, I first want to tell you that, Larry, we've enjoyed your show, my wife and I, and we've also been to Prairie Nursery, and we got our catalog just about 10 days ago, and it's always a great way to brighten up the winter.
Ah, great.
But my wife and I have been restoring. We have beach sand over here on the western side right next to the Mississippi River, and a slope side facing east. And we've been restoring it with native prairie plants for the last 5 or 6 years, and some are very, very well established and others are not. But we have a problem with turf grass being intermixed. So we painstake, and it's probably about 150 feet long by 40 feet deep. So it's a pretty substantial area, but not huge. But we painstakingly take hand shears and cut the prairie grass or the turf grass out a couple times a year, and it looks great when we're done. But is there an easier way to get rid of the turf grass?
Yes, there is, Ryan. And let me ask you this. First and foremost, is it bluegrass? Is it fescue? Do you know the genus or species of this grass?
Oh, if my wife was on, she'd kill me. She's a landscape architect and knows all these things. I do the labor.
I'm just curious because that could, and I'm hoping it's not something like tall fescue, which is not really a turf grass, but sometimes can get into a planting on dry sand. It's not common, but that's a tough one. Another one is brome grass, smooth brome, which is not really a turf grass. It's a pasture grass, is widely planted, also can be problematic, and it's much more difficult to control than your typical turf grass. So if it's bluegrass or fescue, I have answers for you.
Okay, well, let's start with that and assume we got an easy one.
Okay. If you notice that most of your prairie plants are what we call warm season species, they do not emerge from the soil until the soil warms up, usually in the latter part of April, early May, some even later sometimes, depending on the year. Your turf grasses in Wisconsin are cool season grasses, such as bluegrass, fescues. Those are your two primary groups. Some perennial rye also. These are your three main grasses that are used in lawns in Wisconsin. They start to grow usually in early to mid-April. So they get a head start, sometimes 2, 3, 4, even 5 weeks head start on a lot of your warm season prairie flowers and grasses. So they have a huge advantage. They start to lock up the nutrients and the moisture in the soil before the prairie plants even get out of the gate. So they have an innate advantage starting off the season. However, we can take that advantage and use it against them. And there is a wonderful tool that we use in our prairies, and it's called fire. Controlled burning. Are you able to burn this area, Ryan?
My wife would kill me, and so would the police department. Since we're actually in the city, sort of, but it's a city park that we border, and so that's the property. We're not able to burn. I wish we could.
Okay, so the plantings you're doing are on your property or the city property?
No, it's on our property.
Okay. Sometimes the city you can get a variance for that. It depends on the individual city and how they work with that. If you can't, and the reason burning is so effective is because you wait until that grass, the turf grass, is about 5 inches tall. Now, this is usually late April, and
okay.
most of your prairie plants are just emerging or still dormant. And if you can burn that at that time, you will really cook that cool season turf grass. You won't kill it, but you're going to set it way back. And then the soil turns black after the burn, and that heats up the soil into a temperature range that is not necessarily beneficial for the cool season turf grasses, but it's very beneficial for the warm season prairie flowers and grasses. And it completely changes the entire balance of the growing season by doing that. And if you do that 3 years in a row, you will see amazing, amazing change in your balance of flowers and grasses. If you can't burn it, take a lawnmower and set that lawnmower to the very lowest setting, just basically to scalp the ground setting, okay? And go out there at the same time as you would burn. Again, in Onalaska, probably the last week in April. And the best way to determine when to burn or mow is when the buds of the sugar maple, not the red maple, not the silver maple, but the sugar maple, are just breaking open. And that is consistent throughout any year, any season, no matter what the spring weather is. That is consistent with the emergence of the prairie plants and the growth of the cool season turf grasses. So if you can't burn it, go out there and mow it right to the ground. If you can rake off the mowings, that's even better because that exposes the soil to the sun, thus helping the soil to warm up even faster, favoring the predominantly warm season prairie flowers and grasses.
There you go.
Wait, one more question. Can you damage, because the hillside's kind of not smooth, can you use a weed whacker to do the same thing, but would you damage the crowns of the native plants if you hit the ground too close?
Excellent point, Ryan. Certainly you can use a weed whacker. And sometimes a weed whacker is better because you can take it right down to the dirt, even closer than the mower. And you don't, if you have rocks or something in there, you don't have to worry about damaging your mower blade. You should see my mower blade. I mow paths through the woods and hit rocks, and I take it in like 2 times a year to get it sharpened. They're all like, what are you doing with this thing? Well, I'm mowing the rocks. So, yeah, weed whacker is definitely superior in that situation. And I'm sorry, what was your other question about the weed whacker, Ryan?
No, I didn't know if you could damage the crowns of the native plants.
You will have some damage if you wait until late April to do this, but they come right back, and they're going to be growing all the way into, most of them will grow all the way into September, October, so the damage to them is minimal.
There you go.
Thank you very, very much.
You bet.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks a lot for calling. And you can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Back to that, what was it called, tumble glass.
Yeah.
Breanne says the woman who called about that should contact the Oneida County Solid Waste Department. They've got it listed as a landscape option.
Wow.
So maybe in Oneida County, you can get some of that glass. So an Oneida County Solid Waste Department.
Who knew?
Who knew?
The wonders of the internet.
Oh, man. So let's see. We've got John in Milwaukee up next. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I got this area in my backyard. It looks like it used to be wetland. I'm not sure, but it's all clay now. And I tried planting some prairie grasses back there, and they didn't really come up, some big blue stem and stuff like that. The only thing that's growing there right now is buckthorn. That's a bird that planted. I want to know if you had any suggestions what I could do with that area. It's really wet in the spring. It sits underneath like 6 inches of water, and then it kind of dries out the rest of the summer.
Okay. Let me ask you a few questions here, John. How long does that water sit there with 6 inches of depth?
A week or two. Depending on how much rain we get.
Yeah. See, big blue stem is a very moisture-tolerant prairie grass, but if you got a couple weeks of standing water, that is going to be problematic. Do you have our catalog, John?
Not on me. But
okay. But do you have a copy of it?
Yes.
Okay, well, if you look at the plants for moist soils, let me just give you a few suggestions right now, okay, of plants that typically would grow in that situation. One of them is called red milkweed, sometimes also known as marsh milkweed, and this is a preferred food plant for the caterpillar of the monarch butterfly. It is very tolerant of standing water. It'll tolerate standing water in the middle of July, so that's great for wet clay. The irises, wild iris is another good choice, and that will tolerate water constantly, in fact. You may find. Is this full sun or is there some shade involved in this situation?
It's full sun.
Okay, good. You also have the Joe Pye weed. There's the regular Joe Pye weed, and we have tall Joe Pye weed. Tall Joe Pye weed is not a Wisconsin native. We got seed from the Holden Arboretum down in Ohio, but it's perfectly hardy in up to zone 4. And it's one of my favorite plants. It gets 10 feet tall, and it brings in butterflies like you wouldn't believe.
Oh, 10 feet.
I mean, it's huge. It is a heavy hitter, awesome plant. The white turtlehead takes a lot of moisture. The rose mallow, which has beautiful, big pink and white flowers. Boneset, which is another Eupatorium, but it has white flowers. It's really good for bees and wasps. They say,
I don't know that plant. Is it pretty flowers?
It's okay. It's not super killer, but it has great ecological value because bees and wasps. Doesn't everybody want bees and wasps in their garden?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And when I say wasps, you're usually looking at parasitic wasps, and the parasitic wasps attack a lot of the deleterious insects that cause problems in your garden. They're pretty much equal opportunity attackers, and there's a parasitic wasp for every bug, spider, mite, tick, everything out there, and they help to maintain the balance of the garden by keeping everything in control. You also have cardinal flower and great blue lobelia.
There's lots of choices.
I would say those are some of your best choices right there. And of course, there's always the gigantic cup plant, which is a fantastic plant for birds, but be careful. It is one of these aggressive plants that likes to spread by seed, and you plant one plant of cup plant, and before you know it, you've got 20. But if you've got wet clay, cup plant is phenomenal. It gets 10 to 12 feet tall, and the birds go crazy on the seeds.
There you go, John. Lots of good suggestions there. You mentioned red milkweed, and I know Chris on Facebook wondered about seeds for common milkweed, but wants to know where he can get them, and he'd like to start them indoors.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you do it?
Common milkweed is easy to start. You know, it's interesting. Whoever named a lot of these native plants, they weren't doing us any favor in marketing with milkweed and butterfly weed and Joe Pye weed, and of course, my favorite, sneezeweed. That's another plant that.
Yeah, that's going to bring a lot of people running.
Well, you know, one of my employees' fathers would take the seed heads and the flowers from the sneezeweed when the kids had a cold, and they would sniff it, and it would make them sneeze, and it would clean them out. So it was actually used medicinally for this purpose. So if you're looking for something to expunge the effects of your stuffed upness, hey, sneezeweed is your plant. Don't go to the store and buy all that stuff. You can get it right out of your garden. But
Common milkweed, can you sell common milkweed?
Yeah, we sell plants and seeds of common milkweed, and and the red milkweed, and the butterfly weed.
Because I was thinking, you know, if you didn't have the common, the red sounds pretty good. And
the common, see, the common is not a great garden plant. It's a fantastic plant for monarch butterflies, but the red milkweed is as good or better. It is a preferred larval food source. And the thing about the milkweed seeds, universally, you take the seeds in order to optimize germination. You take the seeds and mix them with a quantity of slightly damp, we use sawdust. You can use vermiculite. You can use clean sand, not soil sand, but like some builder sand.
Yeah.
Just get it slightly damp and put the seed in it in a plastic bag and put it in the fridge for 30 days.
Oh.
And this mimics the effects of sitting in the soil over winter in cold, moist conditions, which is a protective mechanism for many of your native seeds. Because let's say the seed falls on the ground on September 15th. It's warm. It's raining. Mm-hmm. Everything's beautiful. I germinate. And November 15th, I'm toast. It's zero and I'm dead. Okay, so it's a protective mechanism that many seeds require this exposure to cold, damp conditions. So you're mimicking that by putting them in an inert material in slightly damp. If you can squeeze water out of the material, it is too wet. Okay, and mix the seed in there, like 5-to-1 inert material to seed.
Yeah.
Label the bag, put it in a fridge in a Ziploc bag, take it out
In 30 days.
Put it in your pots and put it in a warm, sunny spot, and you'll see milkweeds popping up within a couple weeks.
There you go. Patricia in Ottawa has another question. Let's go there. Hi, Patricia.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question. We live on 45 acres in the town of Ottawa in Waukesha County, and we have a lot of wooded acreage. We have wetland, we have a pond, and we have two old fields, and one of them we planted 1 acre into prairie with seeds probably 30 years ago with Bob Ehrenhorster, if you know who he is.
Sure, you bet.
Okay, and it's become beautiful, more beautiful than you can imagine, and we go out there in our John Deere Gator and just sit there and look at it because it's so pretty.
Yep.
And anyway, the past couple of years, we've had a problem, I think, with the big blue stem. It's like gone crazy, and it's almost like taking over, and I'm concerned. It's huge and beautiful, but it's going everywhere, and it's spreading, and I don't know if we should be concerned.
Well, you know, big blue stem is a very strong, big, tough, aggressive native grass.
Yeah.
And we use it in our tall prairie mixes, but we use it quite sparingly. But even after 20 or 30 years, it can really get a full head of steam as it seeds in and becomes more abundant. And what you need is a bison. Because this is what's missing.
I had a donkey or something out there, and he could graze away.
Well, that's an option. The thing about bison is that they preferentially eat grass, and they don't eat as much of the flowers.
That's what I thought about.
Yeah, but you have to have really big, strong fences for a bison. Commonly known as the American buffalo, but it's not actually a buffalo, it's a bison. And that's what's missing from most of our prairie restorations is a grazer, because the grazers keep the grasses in check. And in lieu of having something like bison or elk out there preferentially eating the grasses back, thus favoring the flowers, oftentimes you can see the big tall grasses like big blue stem, switchgrass, and Indian grass. Those are your big three of the tall grasses. They can become dominant over a long period of time. So I'm going to guess you're not going to build a big fence and buy a bison and put the bison out there. So what can you do? There are a couple different methodologies you can pursue here. If you look at the prairies of western Missouri, they are often hayed in late July or early August when the grasses are at their peak, when they're starting to send up their seed stocks and their vegetation production is at its highest and also most palatable.
Okay.
And oftentimes the prairies of western Missouri are arguably the most floriferous remnant prairies in the United States. And that's because they're working prairies.
Yeah.
They've been hayed for 100 and something years, 150 years now, and they're hayed at a time when it does preferentially more damage to many of the grasses than the flowers. Yes, the flowers that are blooming at the same time also are going to be set back, so you will affect the balance of the species in the prairie. But by cutting the big blue stem and the other tall grasses in Wisconsin, I would say usually in the first or second week of August, cut them to the ground, cut the whole prairie to the ground. You will have much reduced beauty that fall. but it will typically set back the vigor of the prairie grasses. Now, many prairies in Missouri are hayed annually or every other year. And if you do this every other year, it gives a year for your flowers to recover. It also gives a year for your grasses to recover. So it really depends upon how dominant those grasses are as to whether you want to do this annually or biennially. By doing it biennially, at least you get to enjoy the late season flowers and grasses every other year.
And so if you do that for what, let's say off and on every other six years or so?
You're going to have to keep at it on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah.
Otherwise, because now the big bluestem has become established. Big bluestem lives for decades.
Yeah.
So it's the boss. So you got to figure out a way to control the boss here. So it's a bit of a long term proposition. Another choice is, if you're okay with using herbicides, you can go out and use grass selective herbicides like Post or Fusilade or Cethoxetine, and you can spray the grasses with these grass selective herbicides when they're actively growing. Usually it's sometime in late June, early July when they're really going. They will not harm the flowers when used according to direction. And they won't necessarily kill your prairie grasses, but they will put a world of hurt on them and thus set back their vigor and then get things back into a little more balance. So that's another option, which is going to give you quicker results, but it will require the use of an herbicide. Yes.
And Patricia, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Neil DeBull, our guest today, president of Prairie Nursery Incorporated in Westfield, Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Neil DeBull, president of Prairie Nursery in Westfield, Wisconsin. Every one of our lines is filled at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Julie in Hollister emailed to ask if it's a good idea to scatter native plant seeds collected in the fall. She has them stored in a metal lidded garbage can in a shed to experience the winter temperatures without being eaten by the critters. They were collected from her land from plants purchased from the Fox River Valley Wild Ones sale in spring and wonders what to do.
Okay, they were from last year? They were.
It seems it must be from last year.
Okay, so they're a year old already. Is what it sounds like, right? From spring of last year?
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Okay. Obviously, as seed gets older, you'll see a drop-off in viability and germination rates. Different species drop off at different rates, and it also depends upon how the seed is stored. If it was stored outside over the summer during hot conditions, then you'll see a proportionally higher rate of loss in viability versus being stored in a refrigerated situation during the hot summer months. But the basic question of scattering the seed in the fall, this is what nature does, and this is a perfectly good method of starting a prairie versus necessarily planting in spring or early summer. Now, we time our plantings of prairies based upon the soil conditions, potential weed issues, and what our goals are for how the prairie is to be composed. For instance, if I scatter a seed mix in the fall versus the spring, I can take the identical same prairie seed mix, same grasses, same flowers, same exact amounts per acre, and plant them side by side on the same soil, one half in the fall, one half in the spring, and I will get two completely different prairies, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years later. Because when you seed in the fall, it tends to favor the germination of the flowers, which many of which require that cold, damp conditions to break seed dormancy. Many of the warm season prairie grasses, like big bluestem, Indian grass, little bluestem, and side oats grandma, these are your big four, they typically do not do well when seeded in the fall because somehow the seed viability deteriorates in the soil over the winter, and we see greatly reduced germination the following spring. Remember, a fall seeding is what we call a dormant seeding.
Yep.
Most of the species will not come up in the fall. There are a couple, like Black-Eyed Susan and Canada Wild Rye and Virginia Wild Rye, planted in September. They will typically germinate in the fall and grow a little bit of a seedling and come back the next spring. The vast majority of the seeds will not come up until the next spring, early summer. So a fall-planted prairie will generally have a higher flower-to-grass ratio, and a spring or early summer seeded prairie will have a higher grass-to-flower ratio. That doesn't mean that if you plant your prairie in May or June, that it's not going to have lots of flowers. It's really, as long as you have a good mix, it doesn't have too much grass in it. So the structure of the mix also is extremely important. You do not want to put too much of the big aggressive grasses in there. And that's why in our seed mixes we use, most of our mixes are 60% grass and 40% flowers by weight. But because the flower seeds are smaller...
Oh, sure.
Okay, you actually have, in terms of seeds per square foot, which is what you're really measuring, it's more like 60 to 65% flowers and 35 to 40% grass in terms of seeds. So you're stacking it up with at least 50% more flowers than grass seed in a typical mix. Some of them even more flowers than grasses. But be that as it may, a fall-seeded prairie is going to typically be more floriferous than a spring-seeded prairie. Now, why would we seed in the spring? Hey, well, let's say we have lots of problems with cool season weeds. Okay, especially like turf grasses.
Oh, sure.
When do turf grasses germinate great? If they're dormant seeds in the soil, they come up in the fall. Or they come up early in the spring. So one of the techniques we use for preventing the growth of cool season turf grasses, some of the clovers like red clover and white clover typically germinate under cool conditions. We wait until late June, even into early, very early July. Usually between June 15th and July 10th, you can plant your prairie then. And because the soil is warm, it favors the germination of many of the prairie species and a lot of your cool season weed species, which you would have known from prior observation of your area that, sure. Oh my gosh, we have lots of these bad guys and we don't want them to get started. They usually won't germinate at that time. So the prairie plants get a head start. So they're boss from the beginning. So sometimes it is beneficial, despite the fact you may want more flowers, it is beneficial to plant in late spring or early summer, to make sure that you can prevent or reduce the problems you would get from cool season weeds.
Very, very cool. Pat in West Bend has something for us here. Let's go there. Pat, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. We have a very close neighbor. We're only maybe 10 feet apart. We've got bungalow-type building, and we can never grow grass, basically, in between the houses too well because of the lack of sunlight. So now from the standpoint of when I hear prairie flowers and the natural, you know, type of vegetation, I'm thinking, well, not a lot of sunlight. Are we going to be able to do anything prairie-wise? You know, seems like an oxymoron maybe. But is there something that we could look at doing in an area like that, you know?
Pat, I have one word for you. Ferns.
No, ferns.
Ferns, yes.
Oh, okay.
And you can combine ferns with woodland wildflowers. Now, you know, our name is Prairie Nursery, and we started out as a prairie nursery some, oh, my God, how many years is this now? 43 years? 40, oh, my
is
God.
Is that right?
Let's see, 1972. I took it over in 82, so 72, 44. This is my 34th year, and the company's been around for 44 years. So, and we started out with just prairie plants, but many of our customers said, hey, I have these shady places where I can't grow anything that needs sun, such as your situation. So we've branched out into woodland plants, and we have a really nice selection of woodland plants. But if you're looking for something that's really low maintenance, and typically between houses like that, it not only does it tend to stay shady, but it tends to have soil that tends to stay damp. Is that correct?
Yes, it will stay damp.
Yeah. And there are a number of ferns that do extremely well in damp, shady conditions. So you have some choices like the interrupted fern,
okay. The
sensitive fern, the cinnamon fern. These are ferns that do particularly well. You might also have some results if not a lot of wind for a lower growing fern, the maidenhair fern. Now, if you have really heavy clay, I wouldn't use a maidenhair fern. It doesn't like it likes a more of a loose, lighter soil.
Okay, well, that wouldn't be us then. Okay. Ours is pretty thick in terms of
heavy clay.
A lot of junk.
Okay, then there's Goldie's fern. This is a new plant that we have this year. Goldie's fern is a wonderful, wonderful fern. And if you want something that creeps and crawls and you don't care, you can put in ostrich fern, Matuccia strutiopterus. Huh? I bring to you from the old country. This is an amazing fern, but watch out. This thing, it creeps and crawls like crazy. You want low maintenance and spread like crazy? Plant this in there and stand back. Watch out. I use it for naturalizing in gully areas and wet areas shade. It's fantastic, and it really fights off a lot of other invaders. It pretty much takes over. But if you want diversity and other species in there, avoid the ostrich fern like the plague. Okay. And then there are a lot of shade-tolerant wildflowers that also might be good choices. And you can look on our website or go get a call our office, and we'd be happy to send you a catalog as well.
That'd be great.
So, excellent. So I hope that helps.
It does. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have all kinds of callers online. We've got some folks that are emailing. We've got Facebook questions. We've got, Julian emailed, wondered about list of available nurseries, you know, where you can go to get some of these. Obviously, we've got Prairie Nursery, but there's the Wild Ones probably, if anything, has a good list of.
Wild Ones and DNR.
DNR as well.
DNR has a list of native plant nurseries.
So if you go to the Department of Natural Resources website, you're going to find some information there as well. And you guys work pretty much all over the state too, don't you?
Yeah. We are primarily a mail order nursery, but a lot of people come to pick up their plants and seeds. We set up they place an order and set up a date and a time to pick it up. Many people come to our retail store, and so we have a store that's open from mid-April to early October, and Monday through Saturday. And our hours are posted on the website. So a lot of people come to the store. And then I do consultations and designs and occasionally do large-scale restorations and installations in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, and you actually go to other countries and everything. I mean, you're a wanderer.
Occasionally, you know, occasional lecture in England or Germany or Sweden or wherever. But, you know, that's not normal.
That's well, you're not a normal guy.
You pegged it, Larry. How long have you known me?
We have been working together for a long, long time, and it's always a lot of fun to talk about native plants and native prairies with Neil. Neil DeBoll, of course, is president of Prairie Nursery Incorporated. We have, if you go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, we've got a link to a Prairie Nursery, but if you just go to type in Prairie Nursery, Westfield, Wisconsin, is going to pop up for sure. And you're always going to find a lot of great information right on the website. Neil DeBoll, Prairie Nursery for Garden Talk, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Neil DeBoll, president of Prairie Nurseries in Westfield, Wisconsin. Great to have Neil back. When we talk with him, obviously, about planting and planting your native plant garden, join in with your questions. I think there's one open line at 800-642-1234. And I've just been reminded that we have a little giveaway going with the Garden Expo. Next week is, if I'm not mistaken, February 12th through the 14th is next week. And that's when the Garden Expo happens in Madison. And we have some pairs of tickets to give away. And how many? We've got four pairs of tickets to give to callers. So when you call in with a question and you want a pair of tickets, we'll give you a pair. What we'll do is we're not going to mail them to you. What you will do is go to Will Call. We'll need to have you hang on. We'll get your name and address, and then you'll be able to just give your name and address, maybe show a driver's license or something, and we'll give you the tickets. So that starts right now, and here's Ruth from Altoona with a question. Hi, Ruth. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I've been enjoying this program so much, so thank you. But I have a question that, you know, always happens in these call-ins. Like, there's no full satisfaction with Creeping Charlie in your yard. No. Any suggestions? You know, I was wondering maybe about putting, like, layers of newspaper under the wooden fence to try to smother it there. I'm trying not to use herbicides, and that's the problem for me.
Sure. Let me ask you a few questions, Ruth.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying putting newspapers under the fence. Is it coming from your neighbors?
No, I'm sharing it with them.
Oh, that's so kind of you. Okay, great.
I know.
And every time we do a show, we do have the Creeping Charlie question. And it's a really, really good question because it's a really, really difficult plant to control.
Yeah.
And Creeping Charlie, you have a number of different ways you can deal with it. But let me ask you another question. I assume this is a shady area. Is that correct?
No, actually, it's both. Mostly, it's sun. We had to take down a huge silver maple tree, which had seven trunks. It had to go.
It was previously shaded.
Yeah. How many square feet are we talking about here?
It's a lot in town, you know, mostly in the backyard. Hasn't really gone to my front yard yet, and that's part of what I'm concerned about. So it's, I don't know.
50 by 50, maybe?
Huh?
50 feet by 50 feet?
At the most, yeah.
Okay. And your soil type, is it a pretty heavy soil?
It's pretty sandy. There's some good soil back there, but Altoona is sandy soil.
Yeah, Creeping Charlie usually does best in a semi-shaded situation, usually with a rich soil, oftentimes a clay type based soil, but if you have a good organic matter in a sandy soil. I have it in my property. I'm on sandy loam and it grows in the shade, and here's what I do. Forget about the lawn, especially if you're not going to use herbicides. And most people, hey, you don't want to use herbicides.
Oh.
So what I do, I got rid of the stupid lawn and the Creeping Charlie and everything else, and I planted native plants. And you're going to want to plant some, you know, good-sized native plants that can fight it out with the Creeping Charlie. Now, first of all, you do have to get rid of the Creeping Charlie before you start this process, as you would with any garden, whether you're putting in a prairie garden, a perennial garden, a flower garden, a vegetable garden, or a woodland, or in any type of situation. So you have options. Creeping Charlie is shallow-rooted, so you can dig it out, but you got to get every single root, because you know if you leave one little root, it's back. It also has the amazing ability to regenerate itself from dormant seeds. So even after you remove all the plants, it's still going to probably germinate. But we have ways to deal with that. Okay, so you get, and if you're okay with herbicides, you can go out and use herbicides. The problem is that Roundup is not always completely effective on it. You may have to resort to a broadleaf herbicide. I hate broadleaf herbicides, but there is one that I will use. It's called Milestone. It's an aminopyrrolid, but the brand name is Milestone. It's the only broadleaf herbicide that has received the EPA's reduced risk designation. It has very low toxicity to mammals, birds, reptiles, pets, etc. It does, however, have a fairly long residence time in the soil. It doesn't break down super rapidly, but it is recognized as being a very low toxicity broadleaf herbicide compared to some of the nasty, nasty things that are on the market and readily available. Anybody can go buy this stuff and spray it all over their yard.
Yeah.
You know? So that's an option. Another choice is to smother it, but you will have to smother Creeping Charlie for an entire growing season. You can use cardboard. You mentioned newspapers. I like cardboard. You get big, like great big pieces of cardboard from like an appliance dealer or something like that, and spread that over it and put a couple layers, and then you can put compost over it. And then basically the cardboard will deteriorate, and then you can just dig holes through that and put your plants in the next year, the next spring. And then to prevent the Creeping Charlie from germinating, you make sure and mulch it. Okay, I'm not a big mulch fan, but if you want to prevent germination of dormant weed seeds in the soil, put 2 or 3 inches of mulch. And now you have the cardboard and the mulch over that, and any dormant seeds are going to have a really difficult time germinating under that after you install your plants. Now, this is using transplants, not seeds. Okay. So, and since you're in full sun, or mostly sun, in the sunny areas, of course, you would select plants that like sun and the appropriate prairie plants to match your sandy soil conditions in a full sun or nearly full sun situation. And then in areas where it's shadier, then you can work with more woodland-type plants that would do better where there's less sun.
So there you go. Lots of things.
It's a time-consuming process, but if you want to do it faster, you can go out there and dig it out by hand. It's a lot of work. And if you just go and rip it out, I mean, you have to dig. You have to dig, and then you have to sift it through the soil. I have a little sifter I made. Out of 2x4s and with a quarter inch mesh screen, heavy duty screen, galvanized screen, and I use that for sifting soil when I want to get rid of weeds and things like that. And you have to dig it out, dump it in the sifter, and then sift it all out, and then get rid of the weeds. And
it's, you know what I do? I get my daughter, and we go. And I've mentioned this on the show before. We go in the backyard, and I even say, okay, we're going to spend an hour. And we go, just get on our hands and knees, and we start pulling Creepy Charlie, and we pull it, and, you know, you never get rid of all of it, but you knock it way back.
Yep.
And then it's kind of gone for the year.
For the year, but then it comes back.
Then it comes back, and then you do it all over again the next year.
Yeah, see, if you have a zero tolerance policy, then you can really, really get it under control. And it really, I would just say it. I do this, it creeps into my food garden from the lawn. It's like, oh, I have a little lawn around the food garden. And I do the same thing, rip it out, and then it comes back the next year. It's just like Sisyphus rolling the rock up the mountain. So if you really want to get rid of it, you either have to sift it or treat it with herbicides or smother it for a full year. Those are your three basic methods of controlling creeping Charlies.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling, Ruth. Appreciate your call. Judy and Janice in Shayocton, I guess, up next. Hi, Janice.
Hi. I have a tansy problem, T-A-N-S-Y.
Mm-hmm.
I have a six-yard, B-yard, what I call a B-yard, and I have been working for the last 10, 15 years trying to get rid of this stuff. I rototilled it. Well, I just replanted it, is what.
That's pretty much it.
I know there's several different kinds of tansy. I can't tell you which one this is, except it is taking over everything, and it's just constant. I've used Roundup after I cut the plant off, and the tall seed, you know, that comes over winter. I've burned that on the field, as well as picking up the tall stalks with the seed pod on the end and dragging it to another place and burning it. I'm at a loss.
Okay. Well, you have 6 acres of tansy?
Well, it's not quite that bad, okay. But it's bad enough.
Okay. That's a mess of tansy. Tanacetum vulgare, the vulgar one, the common one. Yeah, this is another one of our fine Eurasian killer weeds. It's a perennial. And it is allelopathic. It uses chemical warfare exuded from its roots to discourage the growth of other plants. So this is a highly adaptable weed. And so that is one of the reasons why it's taking over. And, you know, it's a medicinal plant. It's very, very powerful. It's a member of the Aster family. It's in a subfamily that is known for its strong fragrances, and that is usually associated with allelopathy or the exudates of chemicals into the soil, which can really knock back the other plants. So how do you handle tansy? You can, because it's a tall plant, you can mow the area for an extended period of time, for 2 or 3 years, and that will usually knock it out. You just go out there like every month and keep mowing it, mm-hmm. mow it back to the ground, and that will eventually exhaust the roots of the tansy. But now you still have dormant seeds in the soil that have built up over the years, so undoubtedly will probably come back. So you may be finding yourself mowing it on a regular basis. Another choice is to use herbicides if that's acceptable to you. And again, Roundup is not particularly effective, although when you're using Roundup, you don't want to cut it back first. Roundup is a foliar herbicide, and glyphosate is the common name for it. Roundup is just a trade name. But glyphosate is a contact herbicide. It has to have actively growing, fully developed foliage to absorb the herbicide and translocate it down to the roots in order to be effective. So you never want to mow just before you would spray with the glyphosate herbicide or any contact herbicide. So you might find you'll have better results with repeated applications of glyphosate. And the timing of it's very important. You want to make sure that the plant is actively growing, really well developed, usually sometime in the latter part, mid to late June, early July, in order to get really good kill. And then another choice is to mow it in late July, early August, let it regrow, and then spray it in mid-September. This is extremely effective for killing all kinds of vegetation because plants are sending their energy down to their roots in the fall, and they are taking that herbicide and putting it into the roots as well. And if you want to really get serious, you can go out there and use a broadleaf herbicide like Milestone, and that will smoke it.
That will smoke it. There you go, Janice. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Loretta in Eau Claire. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Good night. I think that I remember that you were going to write a book with photos to identify emerging prairie plants before they bloom. Is that right?
That is absolutely right, and it's way beyond emerging prairie plants. It's blossomed into this multi-headed hydra. And it is 98% done, and I'm working on photo captions as we speak. And sample seed mixes, and we have been miraculously busy the last year, which has really cut into my time to do this. We had probably the busiest January we've had ever on record this year.
Is that right?
It's amazing. And I think what the reason for that is that people are really realizing all the benefits of native plants. And so we're just hopping like crazy this January.
Well, that's good.
It's
and
really
that's
good.
Normally you'd be spending some time working on the book.
Exactly. Exactly, and I'm in the office helping customers. And
in the meantime, the publisher is saying, when is it going to be done?
The publisher has the patience of Job, and I hope she doesn't tell me to go get lost at this point. But it's really, really close, and I just got to get some time here. It's just the stuff I do like on a Sunday. So
yeah, well, that's the kind, you know, and when that book comes out, for sure. I mean, you normally come back anyway to talk about other things, but we really need to talk about that book when it does come out.
That'd
for sure.
be great. So yeah. we're plugging away at it. It's almost there. I just got to get the final touches on it, and then we'll go to the publisher, and then they'll do whatever they have to do to edit it and draw out the process even longer.
There we go, Loretta. Thanks a lot. And Brianne tells me that we have gone through all of the tickets. So the tickets are long gone. But we still hope you'll go to Garden Expo, but you won't be going at least on our nickel. that's if that's a way to put it. Judy in Eau Claire, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I was wondering a good native plant to put in my backyard, which is mostly shade.
Yeah.
A good native plant for your backyard. Well, what are your priorities for your native plant or plants and for your garden?
Well, something easy and pretty. That's about it.
Easy, pretty. Well, there are so many to choose from. This is like asking, you know, the mother of 12 children which one is her favorite. So, goodness gracious. There are. Do you want one that creeps to form a ground cover and take up space, or do you want one that sits right there? Do you want one with...
How about one of each?
One of each. Okay. what's your soil type?
Oh, I don't know. Shame on me, but...
It's not wet. It's not dry. Correct?
Right. It's a little on the wet side, but...
A little on the wet side.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we talked previously about ferns. Ferns are certainly an option, but they don't have flowers.
Yeah.
So you won't
want something with flowers from the sound of it.
Yeah. And if you're looking for flowers, you know, you always have the trilliums. And we offer three different trilliums. We have the large flower trillium, which is the white trillium that you see all across northern Wisconsin. And then we have a couple other trilliums that are not native to Wisconsin but are perfectly hardy in Wisconsin, including the red trillium and the yellow wake robin. And these are beautiful, beautiful trillium flowers that do fine in our environment. Jack in the Pulpit, which is a very popular plant. Bloodroot is a great plant. Virginia bluebells, which blooms early, but it goes dormant in midsummer. A lot of people think that they're... Bluebells died, but they're just taking the rest of the summer off. These are some of the showiest plants. Wild geranium, a very, very adaptable plant.
And some of those are flowering at different times.
Yeah, and I really would suggest that you put in a lot of different plants that will give you a succession of bloom. And what's interesting is there are some really nice woodland plants that bloom in August and September, including some of the asters and goldenrods that bloom quite late. And one of my favorites, and this is a wonderful plant, maple-leaved alum root. Heuchera villosa variety atropurpurea. Again, this is not a Wisconsin native. Most of our plants are native to Wisconsin. This is an Appalachian plant. It has gorgeous kind of purplish foliage, purple and green foliage, and it has these lovely white flowers in August when there's very little going on in the woodland garden. And it's low-growing. It's a great ground cover when you plant it in groups. And really... very low care once it's established.
And a look at your prairie nursery catalog probably would be worth it, Judy, to have a copy of that.
And you can call our office at 800-476-9453, and we'd be happy to send you a catalog, or you can go to our website at www.prairienursery, and there's a place there where you can sign up or order a catalog. Put in, enter your information, and we will send you our 2016 catalog and growing guide.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks, Judy, for calling. Appreciate it. And let's go to Diane in Oregon. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I have two grandchildren that pretty much survive on my garden during the summer. Between the mulberries and the strawberries and everything else they can find. But one thing I was missing was blueberries. So I bought three blueberry bushes, and I'm just wondering, there are three different kinds, and when do I trim them?
Are they getting out of control or too?
Nope, I just put them in last fall, and so they're...
Yeah, I don't think you need to trim those.
No.
You want to let them grow and develop. If you start to see, in the next few years, if you start to see branches that have died back, then you can trim those in the fall or very early spring before they emerge. Pruning time for most trees, apple trees, et cetera, is early spring, late winter. and similar for most of your berry producing shrubs. But right now, I would let it grow and develop unless you have some dead stems in there. That would be the only thing I would trim at this time.
And if you're in the Oregon area, that's not a very acidic soil at all, and so you're going to have to probably be adding.
Yes, sulfur, muriacid, depending upon what your options are. Yeah, because when you have our high pH soils in southern Wisconsin of 7, 7.3, 7.4, blueberries do best in a pH of between 5 and 6. I tried to grow blueberries at my house in my 7.3 pH soil, and I put pine needles and oak leaves. I mean, I did everything. I put sulfur on it. They all died. Took them a couple of years. And I just did everything I could, and oh, my God, it was just hopeless. So what you have to do if you're going to grow blueberries in those soils, you have to dig a trench and replace that soil with an acidic soil and acidify the soil. Unless you, or you can work with a native soil, but the buffering capacity of our alkaline soils that are based on dolomite and limestone in southern Wisconsin is so powerful, it's really hard to change the pH into a range where blueberries can grow successfully.
I wonder if you could put them in pots and sink the big pots and sink the pots into the soil and...
You know, I've never tried that. I'm sure there's somebody out there that could answer that or has already tried that, but... You know, having never tried that, I wouldn't know.
I wouldn't know either.
Sounds like a great idea, Larry.
Yeah, well, it might be worth thinking about it. We have lots of callers here, and we're about out of time. I want to go back to the catalog for a minute or two and talk about what's in that catalog and what people can find in it. It's such a beautiful catalog. The photography, it is so beautiful.
Well, we have a wide variety of pre-designed plant gardens, and they become extremely popular because it saves you all the time and energy of trying to figure out what plants go where and together. And when you buy them in a garden together, you actually get a pretty nice little discount. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of a quantity discount when you buy one of our full gardens. We also have a wide variety of seed mixes. And the seed mixes are designed for different soils. If you have a dry sandy soil, if you have a heavy clay soil, if you want to attract butterflies, we have a butterfly mix. We have a pollinator mix. We have plants, seed mixes for moist areas. And we have maximum habitat and diversity mixes. We even have a mix to plant over sand septic fields where you have sand with no topsoil.
Yeah.
And you can put a prairie over your septic field and recycle naturally. into the plants. So there's a wide variety of different pre-designed plant gardens, seed mixes, and individual plants and seeds that you can order as you see fit.
You have a big open house kind of, when is that?
That's
happen?
Always the third Saturday in June. And so, and we have usually have a pretty nice little sale.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the third Saturday in June is our open house and tours. And we have tours of our display gardens. And then people can come and pick out plants and take them on home and put them in their gardens.
Oh,
so
well.
It's always the third Saturday in June, and it's a lot of fun.
It is, and I'm looking through this catalog. Well, I wish we had more time to talk, but we are out of time, as a matter of fact.
It's always fun to be here, Larry.
Neil, it's always a great pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us. They really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Neil DeBole is the president of Prairie Nursery in Westfield, Wisconsin. He's been doing this for a long, long time. I'm sorry we didn't get to everyone, but that's typically what happens when we do this show. Lots of callers online, and we try to do the best we can. We can't always get to please everybody, or can't always get to everybody, but at least go to the Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We've got a link to Neil's Prairie Nursery business, and certainly you can get some more information from there. And Monday, we'll get some tips on how to pick out a children's book from an award-winning children's book author I've had on a few times, Kevin Henkes. He's a great author, and we'll look forward to that. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.